Very good guess there. Well, thank you, organizers, especially for the dinner last night. That was great. And I'm very fortunate because Bartek and Martin Hengi both gave great tutorials. And some of the stuff I'm talking about was mentioned there. So, yeah, so Bartek and I and Mohammed Corey, a couple of years ago, we noticed, actually Timothy Brown noticed it about 2000, that if you have a lattice of transmitters and you add some log normal shadowing to it, random variables, then your network can appear like a Poisson point process. And we came up with a mathematical proof for that. And then I was fortunate enough to be in Melbourne last year, enjoying cafes and all the rest. And there's a couple of mathematicians there who were experts in point process and Stein's method. And I gave them this problem to generalize this to more general fading slash shadowing variables. And this is the result. So this is the model, which is probably very familiar to most of people here now. We have a bunch of transmitters denoted by X on the plane. And then we have a path loss function, which I'm denoting with an L. And that maps, that's a decreasing function. And then you have a bunch of random variables, ID, and these represent shadowing or fading. I'll probably just use the term fading. And then this is just the standard statistical propagation model. And then I also, the inverse or the reciprocal of this path loss function, I'll just call G for path gain. And we want to know the random behavior of these power values, or equivalently the inverses, due to historical reasons / mathematical convenience. We usually work with the inverses. And So, as was mentioned earlier in this week, if your transmitters are located according to a Poisson point process, or just homogeneous one, then you can define these inverse values of these power values. That's called the propagation or path loss process. The terms were coined independently. And if your transmitters are located to a Poisson process, then these propagation or path loss process values will also be a Poisson process, but inhomogeneous on the real line, on the positive real line, I should say. And as Bartek emphasized a couple of days ago, the intensity or mean measure of this Poisson process on the real line, it has this nice, simple form where, due to the singular behavior of the path loss function, it's only dependent on the shadowing through one key moment. This is just introducing the mathematical notation to what I mentioned earlier about if you have log normal variables, then this will eventually look like a Poisson process. So I have a deterministic point pattern of transmitters, and things which are deterministic here are smaller letters, so it's phi. And then I use this notation, phi r, just denotes the number of points or transmitters in a ball of radius r. And then, as you know, you have this condition, I think we called it empirically homogeneous, so it converges to some constant. And then you have your log normal variables, IID, and you have this simple path loss function, and then you define the corresponding propagation process based on these three components. Then as your as sigma for the normal random variable goes to infinity, which means that your log normal variables will go in converge to zero in distribution, then you'll get the same inhomogeneous point process, even though your pattern is some deterministic, for example, a grid or a lattice. And as I mentioned, this was observed about 15 years ago now, and then Bartek and Mohammed observed it again, and then it was proven using somewhat classical results from, but the proof relied heavily upon it being log normal, that is, that the normal variable is, divisible and it's symmetric, and also a log normal variable raised to some power is also log normal. And as I said, we wanted to generalize this for more general path loss function, any reasonable path loss or path gain function, I should say, and reasonable independent fading or shadowing variables. And we're also interested in if we could derive bounds on, instead of just having a convergence result, could we have some sort of bounds to give us an indication of how accurate or not accurate this thing was. So again, I introduced some more notation. So this was mentioned in the previous slide or two slides ago. So again, we have a deterministic point pattern, and we have this index set, calligraphic I. We have fairly general path gain functions. And then we have some ID, collection of a sequence of ID, positive random variables, denoted by S. And then we define each value, this propagation process value, as YI, and then the collection, the point process, will be denoted by W. And then we denote the distribution of these y's as lowercase pi. And then if you sum up these pi's, you get the mean measure of w. And then we define z to be the Poisson process on the positive real line with the same mean measure. So what we want is that for w, as we send something to infinity, we want this w to converge to z. And so, I recall the definition of total variation. It's not too important if you don't remember it, but it's the metric that we use to compare the two-point processes, and it has some convenient properties. And what do? We look at these two-point processes, W and Z, so Z against that Poisson point process, and W is that thing that we hopefully looks or. Or appears like a Poisson process with the same mean measure, and we restrict it to this compact domain 0 to t. And then these point processes restricted to this domain, we use this subscript t notation, and then we denote their laws by calligraphic L of the respective point processes. And so we were able to derive some bounds. So here you have the total variation matrix comparing these two-point processes. Z is your Poisson, W is what you would hope looks like Poisson. And we have this upper bound here. And the proof was what I think is a clever coupling argument. And it's very comparable to the proof of Lacan's theorem. And then... So then this upper bound here, this just comes from the definition of the mean measure. And then this supremum, that's just related to the nearest point of your point process to the origin, rather. And then you can also have a lower bound, which is due to a Stein-Smithic argument used by Andrew Barber and Peter Hall back in the 80s, although I'm not entirely sure if that's useful or not. And so this gives you a bound on these two-point processes, and total variation holds under functions of this point process. So this hasn't been done. We did not do this in the paper, but you should be able to derive now functions of this point process, for example, the strongest signal, and use this to derive upper bounds on how these, how the values differ under the two different point processes. And as I say here, it needs more exploring. Anyway, this is an approximation theorem, of course, but with a little bit of mathematical elbow grease, you can convert it into a convergence theorem. So now your path gain function is its path gain function is increasing, which is reasonable. I mean, you have a collection of fading IID. Fading or shadowing random variables, positive, and they're indexed by some parameter. I suppose I should have put a subscript I here, but we can just pretend there's an I there. And this parameter is not necessarily the standard deviation. It is for the log normal case, but it's just some parameter that when you set it to infinity, your fading variables will converge to zero. And as you do this, your W process, based on this deterministic configuration of base stations, will converge to a Poisson process with the mean measure of that will converge to a Poisson process. So you could have started off with a Poisson process of transmitters, or you could just had this deterministic grid, deterministic point pattern. And so what's happening here is that because your fading variables are going to zero, but you're dividing by your fading variables, you're effectively throwing all your points on the relay out to zero. And out to infinity. And I've been told by A.Y. Shah, my co-author, that this type of, he referred to this as a thinning scheme. It's not entirely obvious that it's a thinning scheme, but the idea is that you have this compact set of 0 to t, and your points are getting thrown out of that. So he calls that a thinning scheme. And this is different to previous thinning schemes by Kallenberg, Timothy Brown, a different Timothy Brown, and more recently Dominic Schumacher. And Dominic Schumacher actually saw a similar talk to this, and I think he's now convinced that it is a different type of thinning scheme. And And so that was for a deterministic point pattern of transmitters. You can generalize it by replacing that deterministic point pattern by a point process. And then this is just introducing notation for this, that when now your transmitters are random, but not necessarily a Poisson point process. And Volcker kindly introduced before Cox process. So Cox process is basically, you know, a Poisson process with a random mean or intensity measure. And so this is what Z is here now, and you say that a Cox process is directed by a mean measure. And this is the equivalent bound. So now, if you have your transmitters scattered according to some random point process, then this propagation process, these points mapped to the real line, positive real line, can be a Cox process. And it's also possible to derive a limit theorem there. But we asked the question, when will, what random point patterns, point processes of your transmitters, when will they give you a Cox process and when will they give you a Poisson point process? And so as an attempt to shed some light on that, we derived this theorem. And so we have phi, this is your point process of transmitters. And then here's its mean measure. So R just denotes again the number of points in within the ball of radius R. And as your radius increases to infinity, your mean measure needs to increase to go to infinity. And if you have the variance of the number of points in this ball divided by the mean measure squared, if that goes to zero, and you have IID fading variables, then going to zero, then this propagation process or path loss process should converge weakly to a Poisson process and not to a Cox process. And how am I going for time?
5 minutes.
Okay, excellent. And I think my voice is going to give way. And so here's some examples. So the first example, well, this is basically that previous result. You have a deterministic point process, and this last theorem just is saying what the previous theorem said. So you get a Poisson process. And if your point process of transmitters is a homogeneous Poisson process, then perhaps not surprisingly, when you send these variables, when you do this convergence, the limit of this convergence, then you get also a Poisson process. But if your transmitters, the third example, if your transmitters are Cox process, where, as a simple example, you have two possible Poisson processes and you flip a coin, I think we have a fair coin here, yes, and you flip your coin and you look at which process you get, they have different intensity measures, then This would not converge to a process, Poisson process, even though you send your fading variables to zero, and these expressions where this term here needed to go to zero to get a Poisson process, and it's not going to go to zero unless you got the same the densities match. And this last example is looking at so-called product fading shadowing models, and it's possible to get a Cox process, and to some this may be intuitive, but I think Cyan mentioned earlier in the week that if you have the Suzuki distribution, which is just an exponential variable multiplied, so the fading shadowing Suzuki model is you get an exponential IID exponentials and multiply them by respective IID log normals in K by SIs. And again, you send these SIs to zero, then your resulting process will be a Poisson process with this intensity measure. We've rescaled it so these moments are one, so you get this simple form. Now, if you replace one, so obviously, if you have a product of each product of these two I, the fading shadowing variables, then it can just be another, you'll get a collection of independent and IID fading slash shadowing variables. But now, if you replace one of these variables, doesn't matter which one, by a common variable, I don't know why you would do this, but say if you do. So you have the S's, you have this part here is an IID set of variables, but this F is, here it's a, well, it can be any positive variable. Then what you'll get is it will converge to a Cox process because your resulting propagation process will converge to a Poisson process with a random mean measure. So you have this F here and then this other term from up here. But because it's random, it's a Cox process. And so my colleagues were quite happy about this because I feel that they have some nice theoretical tools then in Melbourne and then actually found a somewhat tangible application. And so, but we haven't really answered the more, I suppose, practical questions like, okay, it converges to Poisson or Cox, but like, how close does it look like Poisson or Cox in reality? I mentioned before that those total variation bounds, you should be able to do work with those and derive things like the difference between the largest signal based on a Poisson model and a non-Poisson model, give you upper bounds. I haven't looked into that. I keep promising myself I will, but it hasn't happened. And so that's, you know, I suppose you could also do like a lot of numerical investigations with simulations and that, with different propagation, fading, shadowing models. And then can, you know, statistical parameter estimation methods be developed? You know, you don't need a singular path loss function here. It's quite general. And then independence of these fading variables was a strong condition, a necessary condition. But of course, we know that, say, shadowing is correlated. So I've been speaking to a colleague of mine. Maybe we can extend this to like something with a bit of dependence, like a Gaussian random field. And then we're curious whether or not these results can be applied to other fields, other problems. Thank you. No, we did not, in this convergence result, no, I feel that, you mean like after they've converged to the Poisson process? We did look at the sums at all, but that, didn't you have... Oh no, that in Bartek's lecture, those are SNIRs because they had sums in those. No, I No, not that I'm aware of. Well, we did look at it. Unless there's something obvious that's escaping me.
Thank you.
Thank you.